Welcome to the Smart Energy Channel at Potec.net. I'm your host, Marco Gerritsen. Today we continue our discussion of biofuels. Mark Jacobson, my Stanford colleague whom you heard in the previous podcast on wind energy, will discuss the health and climate impacts of burning ethanol. And he will compare it to diesel, biodiesel and gasoline. Strong claims are made about E85. It's supposed to be cleaner, to reduce ozone-forming pollution, and to reduce the release of harmful compounds like benzene, toluene and xylene. Mark's research shows, however, that these statements are a bit misleading. Burning E85 will not lead to reductions in harmful emissions, but on the positive side, it will not increase such emissions either. Enjoy this talk by Mark, and I hope you will learn more about emissions.
Okay, so ethanol is another option for what people argue to address climate change and air pollution, in addition to other issues. So first, I want to look at just the ethanol process, then I'll talk about the climate effects from other studies, and then I'll talk about the air pollution studies from work that I've done. Okay, so first, how do you produce, we'll talk about ethanol from corn and from, mostly from corn, but there's also cellulosic ethanol and also from sugarcane. Now, there are emissions associated with ethanol along the whole production process. And there's other issues as well, which I'm not going to get into. But in order to produce ethanol, you first need to displace existing land use or convert existing land use. If you have corn for food, you have to convert it to corn for ethanol production. But generally, if you do this on a large scale, of course, that would just drive up the price of corn. And so somebody else in another part of the world is going to have to convert the land use there to produce a corn field. You'll need to plant and fertilize and water and harvest the corn. And all of these, fertilization, for example, it requires ammonia, and you get nitrous oxide emissions. You get emissions of certain types of greenhouse gases associated with it, and producing the fertilizer and actually in the emissions from the fertilizer itself. And the watering takes energy. Harvesting takes energy. Usually you have tractors that use diesel, and they put particles in the air. And particles, remember from my first slide, the black carbon, which is actually the major particle emissions from tractors, causes global warming. So these are things to consider. But then there's transport of the corn to the ethanol production plant, which requires emissions either through locomotives or barges some other trucks. Then you have to convert the corn. And just briefly, enzymes are added to starch and water to form glucose. Yeast is added to ferment the glucose to ethanol. Water and carbon dioxide. Gasoline is then added to form a fuel. And corn co-products, though, which are produced simultaneously, which are a benefit, include gluten, meal, feed, and dried distillers grains. But you need fossil fuel energy in most cases to produce the ethanol. And then finally, after you produce the ethanol, you need to distribute it to stations. And then you use the ethanol in a vehicle. Now, for sugarcane, just some advantages of sugarcane, that there are higher ethanol yields per acre, but greater transport and labor and processing requirements. And sugarcane in Brazil displaces more stored carbon than maybe in some other places. And there's switchgrass is another source of ethanol, but the difficulty is that sugar, you need to break down these sugars and or the cellulose, because sugars and cellulose and hemicellulose are locked in these polysaccharides, and they're broken down by acids or enzyme hydrolysis during intensive process that uses a bit of energy. But you can use the lignin from the cellulosic, switchgrass for heat, which is a benefit, resulting in less emissions. But on a large scale, there's only a couple test facilities, and cellulosic ethanol hasn't been produced on a large scale to date. Large enough scale, I mean by industrial scale. So let's just look at the CO2 equivalent emissions from some other studies of ethanol. So I'm going to start with Delucci, which is the most recent study, and I'd say is the most comprehensive study on this subject to date, in the breadth of not only looking at ethanol, but also looking at other fuels, and looking at all the carbon and all the emissions associated with ethanol, including the soot, which is pretty critical, and looking at land use change, et cetera. So from their study, they found that the net carbon emission, because people argue that ethanol is a renewable fuel. And certainly it is renewable in the sense that the carbon that is burned or combusted when you're using the fuel in an automobile, it comes back out of the atmosphere to grow the corn. That part there's no doubt about. However, you really have to look at the whole balance of all the emissions and all their effects on climate. And when you do this, what you find is that there's really, in this study, there's only a 2% difference in the net emissions, accounting for all the emissions, between corn ethanol and gasoline, and gasoline for light-duty vehicles, which is effectively no benefit. Within a margin of error, there's zero benefit from this study of using corn ethanol in terms of addressing climate change. Now, this is in the U.S., but the same study looked at China, and there was a 17% disbenefit. Producing corn ethanol actually resulted in about 17% more carbon emissions than producing gasoline. And in India, about 11% more, in Japan, 1%, in Chile, 6% less. Now, the same study looked at switchgrass ethanol. They projected 44% less CO2, so there is where there might be some benefit. However, according to the DOE, large-scale cellulosic ethanol is about 15 years from fruition. Now, the same study looked at other types of biofuels. So biodiesel, soy biodiesel, for example, produced 50% more CO2 equivalent emissions than heavy-duty diesel. So again, there's no benefit in terms of climate change of using soy biodiesel from this study. And most of this problem was due to the fact that the fuel feedstock and fertilizer production and cultivation, that's where you got most of your emissions when you looked at soy biodiesel. Now, there are a couple other studies that I'll refer to. 2006, another pretty very detailed study, by Patzik at UC Berkeley, and they found that about 20% more CO2 equivalent emissions from corn ethanol than gasoline. And on the other side, there's a study by Farrell et al., also from Berkeley, about 10 to 15% less CO2 equivalent emissions than gasoline. I mean, the bottom line is there's no discernible or kind of statistically significant difference between the emissions from ethanol and gasoline. So now the question I was also interested in, what's the effect of ethanol on your health? Well, if you look at what's on the web from the American Lung Association, you'd say, well, ethanol is great. E85, which is 85% ethanol and 15% gasoline. And by the way, 100% ethanol is really 95% ethanol plus 5% gasoline, because gasoline is added as a denaturant, so you don't drink the ethanol. And anyway, so E85, they say, is cleaner. It reduces ozone-forming pollution by 20%. Ethanol is less toxic. Gasoline contains compounds like benzene, toluene, and xylene. Use of E85 reduces the release of these chemicals. Okay, so I'm no fan of gasoline, but when I look at this, I think, well, where do they get this information? Because nobody's ever done a study on this subject. So, and so you get the same information from the Clean Fuels Network. E85 burns cleaner compared to conventional gasoline by reducing ozone-forming volatile compounds. Now, if you actually look at this and find out where this information comes from, well, what they do is they look at the emission changes, and then they hypothesize, based on back-of-the-envelope calculations, what's the effect on the atmosphere and people's health, just from basically back-of-the-envelope calculation. So my goal was to do a study that was kind of a little more rigorous. Let's look at do a three-dimensional computer model of the United States, and actually a higher resolution version in Los Angeles. Let's look at that accounts for physical, chemical, radiative, dynamical, and processes in the atmosphere, in combination with spatial emissions data that's at high resolution, population data, and health effects data, to see what is the effect possibly of E85 versus gasoline on human health. So just to start with, if you just look at the laboratory data of the emission changes due to E85, well, oxides of nitrogen and this is just looking at the vehicle emissions. So here, I'm just looking at vehicle emissions, not looking at the rest of the fuel cycle. Just what happens in an airshed, let's say Los Angeles, and then I'll also look at the US as a whole, mostly it would be near population centers. So from the vehicles, E85 reduces oxides of nitrogen. So that's one place they get information, which you think, okay, that must be good, that you're reducing oxides of nitrogen. And from the various studies, it's minus 59% or 59% reduction, and some studies show up to a 33% increase. But for this study that I'm going to show, and I do sensitivities, but this will be the baseline case, I'll assume minus 30% reduction. Carbon monoxide, there's actually a range as well of minus 33% to plus 320% of the E85 versus gasoline. And so I use plus 5% as the baseline, although this one doesn't matter so much. Total organic gas, E85 pretty much increases your total organic gas emissions. And I used a number that was very conservative, even below the range that from the emission studies. And methane, E85 also increases methane, it turns out, because what it does is gasoline contains aromatics and these high molecular weight carbon compounds. And ethanol is two carbons. So you really shift these kind of high molecular weight organics to low molecular weight organics when you switch to E85 or some kind of ethanol fuel. So you get a lot more methane, and it'll turn out you get a lot of unburned ethanol as well. And you get a lot of formaldehyde, get an enhancement of formaldehyde, and you get an enhancement of acetaldehyde by 2,000%. That's a factor of 20. Now, acetaldehyde and formaldehyde are both carcinogens. So you remember that the Lung Association says, well, E85 is reducing the benzene and butadiene, which are carcinogens. It's true, they do. But the E85 is also increasing formaldehyde and acetaldehyde, which are carcinogens. So you have to look at what's the net effect. The butadiene goes down. Benzene goes down quite a bit because there's no benzene in the ethanol. It's just in the portion that's gasoline. Now, particulate matter, I assume no change, although one study found an increase of about 100% particulate matter by number and 31% by mass. But I assume no change for this study since it's not enough information to go on. Okay, so I just want to show you some results for Los Angeles and the U.S. as a whole. What's the effect of using E85 on your health and the population's health? And then this is also in 2020. And to get 2020 data, I used the U.S. National Emission Inventory for 2002 and then went up using two separate independent estimates, one from the California Resources Board and one from a scientist at Argonne National Lab, to project these emissions to 2020. And then I applied these emissions were for both gasoline and ethanol. Then I applied those changes, those percent changes, to the 2020 emissions that I just showed you. So here's the population distribution of Los Angeles. So just so when you look at the changes in the concentration of the pollutants, you know where the people are living. And here's for the US as a whole. Okay. So here's this is over a month of simulation, computer simulation. So here's the change in acetaldehyde. You go up about 1.5 parts per billion volume. But most of this increase of acetaldehyde, although you get increase of emissions of acetaldehyde from ethanol, a lot of that is actually due to the oxidation in the atmosphere of this unburned ethanol. But this unburned ethanol will actually last a lot longer, so it'll spread globally. So this is another potential issue, which I actually haven't looked at yet, is what's the potential global effects of all this unburned ethanol traveling globally. Now, formaldehyde also goes up by, this goes up by about 0.2 parts per billion. Methane goes up by about 4 parts per billion here. And I'll quantify some of the health effects in this a little bit. But on the other hand, nitrogen dioxide, remember the nitrogen oxides go down, so this goes down about up to 4 parts per billion. Toluene goes down. Butadiene goes down. Benzene goes down. Now, ozone, this is the one that most people are concerned with. There's a net increase of ozone. And so this is where the American Lung Association should really be concerned, because this is what causes most of the health effects, it turns out. So there's a net increase of 3 parts per billion of ozone in the maximum increase. And you can see it's kind of right where people live. So what's the population? If I actually take every little pixel here, and then I know the population in 2020 there, I could do a population-weighted change of mixing ratio above 35 parts per billion, which is the threshold for health effects problems due to ozone. And so you get an increase of about 1.33 parts per billion volume. So this converts into a change of number of deaths per year in the Los Angeles base of about 120. Now, another thing that the ethanol increases is peroxyacetyl nitrate, which is the most potent eye irritant in smog. And that goes up somewhat. But if we do the whole US, we can do the same thing. But the interesting thing is, in the US, the ethanol would increase ozone. This is the change of ozone, mostly in the big cities and along the East Coast and in Los Angeles. But there's actually some decreases in the southeastern U.S. because of a variety of factors, the fact that there's a lot of vegetation there already that plays into it, into the chemistry. So there's still going to be a net effect of ethanol, but it's not going to be much bigger than just the effect in Los Angeles, because you have increases of deaths in most places counteracted by decreases in other places. Okay, so let's then look at another issue. Still have a couple more to go, but these won't take so long. I want to look at diesel versus gasoline. And why am I interested in this? Because that's another proposal to address climate change has been to fill the roads with diesel in California and the U.S. Now, in the European Union, more than 30% of all passenger vehicles are diesel, and that's been increasing. In the U.S., still less than 1% are diesel, but there have been proposals to put a lot more diesels on the road. Almost all trucks and buses in the U.S. and the European Union are diesel. In 2005, there was an energy bill that actually gave a tax credit for diesels and put them in the same class as hybrid vehicles. And so just wondering, like, why was this done? I mean, because it was done on the thought that diesels are actually helping to solve the climate problem. But little did they know, they didn't bother looking at studies on the effects of air of these diesels, these modern diesels, which are diesels with particle traps and NOx filters to control the NOx, and I'll explain that in a second. Even when you have these devices on, they still cause more air pollution than gasoline vehicles. And the other issue is if they don't have those particle traps, then they put out soot, because diesels are notorious for putting out particulate matter. And the soot, as I showed the first slide, causes global warming. In fact, it's the second most important component of global warming after carbon dioxide. So it turns out, I mean, if you buy a diesel vehicle in the U.S. today, you can't buy one in California, because California is smart enough to actually have made the standards pretty tight enough so you can't buy a diesel. But if you buy one in another state, then none of the diesel vehicles in the U.S. have particle traps or NOx filters, which are the control technologies I'm talking about here. So they're all enhancing global warming, and they're all enhancing air pollution. Okay, so let's just look at a typical, what's the difference between a diesel and gasoline in terms of emissions? Now, this is a standard gasoline vehicle, and this is a diesel vehicle with a particle trap on it, but without a NOx filter. And this was data from a Peugeot, which for some reason they sent to me. I'm not sure. The nice thing about a particle traps, they filter out particles coming out of the tailpipe, and they do it pretty well. But still, as a result of the particle trap, you can see that diesels with a particle trap actually produce more particles than do gasoline vehicles. You'd be surprised with that, even though the diesel guy will come out and say, he'll show you the handkerchief and say, this handkerchief is white even after I put it in front of the exhaust, so there are no more particles coming out of this diesel vehicle. But in fact, they are much cleaner. To the credit, they're very much cleaner than they used to be, but they're still dirtier than gasoline vehicles. So the question is, do you want to put in 200 million cars that are have two to three times more particles than the gasoline vehicles? So, but let's just look at, well, what's the mileage difference? Let's look at the highest mileage vehicles available in the U.S. in 2005. And these are just manual transmissions, just to give you a comparison. Now, the Honda Insight's a gas electric, Honda Civic's a hybrid. These are both hybrids. The third highest mileage vehicle was a diesel, 42 miles a gallon. But you'll notice this next two were gasoline vehicles. And so they got slightly lower mileage. So it turns out, well, so because of this higher mileage of the diesel relative to the gasoline, lawmakers say, well, this should be better for climate. But it turns out every gallon of diesel is more dense than every gallon of gasoline. Okay, so let me just jump to the conclusions here. Ethanol enhances ozone pollution over current vehicles. Modern light-duty diesel will produce more ozone and particulate matter than gasoline. Other studies have suggested that corn ethanol has no discernible climate benefit. Cellulosic ethanol does not exist at the industrial scale. Soy biodiesel produces more equivalent CO2 than regular diesel for heavy-duty vehicles. Finally, diversion of resources to biofuels and diesel, in my opinion, which have no discernible air quality or climate benefit today based on current scientific understanding at the expense of true renewables, which I've listed, which will have an immediate benefit, will cause a certain climate and health damage as CO2 population and energy use rise further. And given the rate of change of CO2 and these other air pollutants today, I think it's imminent that we have to really go to zero emitting fuels immediately, and we don't really have time to kind of dilly-dally around with fuels that may have a few percent improvements. So thank you very much. Yeah.